It's Wednesday, September 24th, 2008, which means you have less than 23 days to register for NormalCon 2008. It's Normal's 37th annual national conference, Friday, October 17th through Sunday, October 19th, at the DoubleTree Hotel and Executive Meeting Center, Berkeley Marina, in Berkeley, California. Register now for the conference. Early registrations get special discount pricing. Don't delay. We have negotiated a special rate for rooms that are sure to sell out fast. The theme of the convention is It's Not Your Parents' Prohibition. Over the first 2 days, you'll learn more than you thought you could know about marijuana law reform in our plenary and breakout sessions, which include how the media lie about cannabis, growing up and raising children in the age of legal medical pot, politics 2008, pot culture, the politics of marijuana and health. War on pot is a war on young people. What if we arrested 20 million Americans and nobody noticed? Featuring the top experts in marijuana law reform from Normal and other cannabis-centered organizations. On Sunday, Oaksterdam University presents a look at California's medical marijuana dispensary businesses. But it's not all work and no play. NormalCon 2008 also presents social gatherings and entertainment in the evenings so activists and attendees can network. It's 3 days of the best marijuana conference in the world with the largest, most popular marijuana organization in the world. Join us October 17th through 19th for the Normal National Conference in Berkeley, California. Sign up online today at norml.org. It's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world. Featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. Thanks for downloading us today. Yeah, we want to remind you about that Normal conference. October 1st is the last day to register if you want to get the discounted room rates at that DoubleTree Hotel. So make sure you check out normal.org/conference as soon as possible. Now, for the news on today's Stash, we're going to go kind of California-centric because there's been a lot of news breaking down there with regards to medical marijuana. For our interview today for Cannabis Science, we're going to be talking again with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, and we're going to talk about the subject of drug testing. And then a feature from the 2008 Portland Hemp Stock, two speeches, one from California medical marijuana expert and West Coast Leaf editor Chris Conrad, and the Reverend Eddie Lepp, the grower at Eddie's Medicinal Gardens, who was convicted of felony drug charges in a federal court earlier this year and faces sentencing on December 1st. Also, we're still looking for marijuana unicorns out there. If you're a unicorn, send us an email at stash@normal.org. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just keep listening. The ad will be appearing right after the news. All right, everybody, it's time to get to it. Sit back, relax, grab yourself a tie stick, and enjoy your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. California sees nearly 75,000 marijuana arrests in 2007, from the Times Standard Online. The nearly 75,000 marijuana-related arrests in California last year are prompting marijuana law reform activists to say that laws aren't stopping people from getting what they want, while local law enforcement responds that the increased number of arrests is simply the result of tighter enforcement. According to the State Department of Justice's Criminal Justice Statistics Center, 74,119 felony and misdemeanor marijuana arrests were made in 2007, a jump of nearly 10,000 arrests from 2006, which saw 65,386. Between 2001 and 2006, the differences from year to year were much smaller. In Humboldt County alone, more people are getting arrested, and more of those arrested are getting charged with serious crimes. The number of marijuana-related arrests in Humboldt nearly doubled between 2006 and 2007, jumping from 564 to 971. In 2006, 138 people were charged with marijuana felonies, while in 2007 that number ballooned to 550. Meanwhile, the number of marijuana misdemeanors between the 2 years has stayed roughly the same. California Normal's Dale Geringer said the statewide numbers are the highest since 1990, which he says is a sign that these arrests are only wasting taxpayer money. Humboldt County District Attorney Paul Gallegos said, "While there may be some legitimate reasons to legalize marijuana, increased arrests is not one of them." He said, quote, "I don't think the increased arrest is any indication that this needs to be legalized. It's no more than if murder went up that we should legalize murder," end quote. Yes, because growing marijuana for adults who want it is just like taking someone's life. Pot farming is a lot like murder. Yeah, that's it. It's like arguing with a junior high school kid sometimes. "Well, if all your friends jumped off a bridge, would you, huh?" "Well, I don't know. Do my friends all survive? Is it a bridge over a lake? Who knows, maybe they all die and I'm so distraught I jump off the bridge too. Are we really going to have a meaningful conversation if you're hypothesizing about mass bridge suicides or comparing breaking pot laws to killing people? I've heard this argument from actual adults that you don't legalize marijuana just because it's impossible to stamp out any more than you don't legalize rape because it's impossible to stamp out. That just because people will always commit a crime, that doesn't mean you stop punishing people for it." Where this argument fails the common sense test is that rational people can understand that there are crimes of the broke a rule category and crimes of the sins against humanity category. Nobody really needs a written statute to understand that murder, rape, and robbery are crimes of the sin category. You are directly harming another and there is an identifiable victim. But cannabis possession and cultivation are crimes in definition only. Both the provider and the consumer want to engage in the activity, which affects no one but them. They'll try to make the argument of indirect harm, that pot smokers cause injuries and broken homes and loss of productivity and crime and whatever. But each of those arguments is either bogus or attributable to the prohibition, not the plant. And the indirect harm argument, well, that's a nice slippery slope that leads to banning cigarettes, alcohol, trans fats, high fructose corn syrup, and cars. All of those cause more indirect harm to society than a doobie. Keep in mind that marijuana smoking is not illegal in the U.S. Possession of marijuana is what's illegal. You will be arrested for that plant whether you smoke it or not. If you've smoked it and have no more of the plant, there's no crime to charge you with. But not only that, the plant itself, absent possession by anyone, is illegal. The cops will and do spend lots of time and money ripping up wild marijuana plants that belong to no one. The stated policy of our government amounts to a program of extinction of a species. Oh, the irony that the plant perfect for solving our energy, hunger, medical, and economic crises is the one our government deems so evil it must be wiped off the planet and its gardeners must be imprisoned. Kings County, California okays medical marijuana ID cards. From the Hanford Sentinel News. There was no debate, no controversy, no protest. People using marijuana for medical purposes with doctor's recommendation will be issued state-sanctioned identification cards in Kings County, the Board of Supervisors decided Tuesday. By unanimous vote, the supervisors adopted a medical marijuana ID card program. The decision makes Kings County the 42nd California county to establish the program in compliance with a 2003 state law. The program, which advises police to accept the authenticated cards as proof of medical need, is intended to help legitimate patients with serious illness avoid arrest while giving police the tools to distinguish legal medical marijuana users from illegal stoners. You know, those illegal stoners, the people who've committed the crime of being too healthy to smoke marijuana. The decision comes as a result of July 31st ruling by the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals that rejected the challenge by San Bernardino and San Diego counties and upheld that the medical marijuana ID system is legal. Similar decisions are pending in several other counties. Currently, there are no medical marijuana dispensaries in Kings County. Fresno County, which has recently adopted its medical marijuana ID card program, projects about 500 patients seeking the cards. Tulare County, which implemented its program in 2006, has issued about 40 cards over the past year, although officials say the $300 plus fee might have discouraged applications. In Kings County, about 10 individuals are projected to apply for the cards, said Perry Rickard, Public Health Department Director. County officials say some strict protocols must be followed before ID cards are issued to patients with proven need for medical pot. The county charges a fee of $225 per application and half that for a Medi-Cal beneficiary. The application must designate a primary care provider and includes a physician-signed recommendation proving that the need is legitimate. In addition, an electronically transmittable photo will be taken of an applicant and sent over to the state. During a 30-day verification period, the county will verify the applicant's residence within the county and recommending physician's licensure status with the Medical Board of California, Rickard said. Congratulations to Kings County for making the sensible decision to protect medical marijuana users from arrest and harassment. And at $225 a pop, that's some good money the county could be making. Now, just imagine if every social cannabis user had to purchase a $225 stoner license every year. How much revenue would that generate for government? Medical marijuana registration fees have proven that cannabis users are willing to pay protection money to the authorities. How long will it be before government realizes there is more money to be made from legalization than from prohibition? Santa Cruz City Council okays smoking pot in wham tent. From the San Jose Mercury News. Medical marijuana patients will once again be allowed to smoke dope in San Lorenzo Park this Saturday after city leaders temporarily lifted a smoking ban to allow for a festival celebrating the medicinal herb. The decision came after testimony from more than 20 patients who reasoned and pleaded with the Santa Cruz City Council to allow them to inhale their medication while partaking in the Women's Alliance for Medical Marijuana's annual Wham Fest. Some accused council members of growing old and more conservative, while others said Santa Cruz was losing both its compassion and its weirdness. The catch, however, is that the ban was not lifted for the entire park. Instead, those with a medical marijuana identification card only will be allowed to smoke inside a tent designated for that purpose. Council members approved the proposal on a 5-1 vote, with Councilwoman Lynn Robinson voting against the measure and Mayor Ryan Coonerty absent. Robinson said she does not like making exceptions to rules that the city requires everyone else to follow. Imagine if you were in charge of a city park and there was a festival going on, but before anyone could enter, they were tested to see if they were on any painkillers like oxycodone or acetaminophen or on any mood stabilizers like Prozac or Xanax. And if they were on any of these drugs, they're not allowed to attend. Councilwoman Robinson believes that Wham was asking for an exception to a rule that everyone else follows. But that rule was a rule against smoking in the park. Tobacco or cannabis. Since there is no medical tobacco, then the ban was against recreational smoking. Wham didn't ask for that. They asked that their members would be allowed to be and get medicated. Everyone else who goes to that park is allowed to be under the influence or take their legally ingested medication. Why should medical marijuana patients be any different? If a healthy person was at the event and got a headache, they'd be allowed to take an aspirin in plain view. Why can't the legal medical marijuana patient take their medicine? Well, again, it's that untenable dichotomy between legal sick person and illegal healthy person when it comes to marijuana. And the patients have to fight and scratch and beg to be allowed to medicate hidden from view in a tent, lest sensitive public eyes unwittingly see someone smoking weed. Until marijuana is legal for all, patients will continue to be separate but equal in public accommodations. Young man sells weed to support seven kids. Fort Pierce, Florida. A 25-year-old man told police during a raid of his home Tuesday that he was selling marijuana to help support his seven kids, according to an arrest affidavit released Wednesday. But the excuse didn't keep Antonio L. Mills out of jail after investigators turned up about 2.5 ounces of marijuana in the refrigerator of his home in the 800 block of North 23rd Street. Mills said he peddles marijuana to, quote, supplement his income because he has seven children, end quote. Mills faces felony charges of possession of marijuana with intent to sell, possession of more than 20 grams of marijuana, and possession of a firearm while in the commission of a felony. Antonio Mills will now be tried and, if convicted, sentenced to at least a 5-year mandatory minimum, probably more. The state will probably have to take care of Mills' seven kids, and who knows what kind of effect they'll suffer from losing their daddy during their formative years. Here he is, trying to keep his family together with the only decent job prospect many young men have. That is something we have to think about as we work to end adult marijuana prohibition and institute a system of taxed and regulated controls on marijuana sales. When weed is no longer illegal and subject to black market pricing, what will millions of weed dealers, growers, and smugglers, and thousands of weed-fighting cops, prosecutors, and prison guards do for a living? Unless we revive our manufacturing base and provide lots of good, low-skill union jobs for them, I fear the black marketeers will just switch products to a still-banned drug like cocaine or heroin. Then, when use and overdose rates of those drugs hit the news, the drug warriors will blame the legalization of weed.
Now it's time to play Pass the Stash, where you can win cool prizes from Normal.
U.S. Drug Czar John Walters doesn't believe anybody is in jail for marijuana possession.
The fact is today, people don't go to jail for possession of marijuana. Finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn.
But the loveliest of them all was the unicorn.
Are you one of the Drug Czar's unicorns? Did you serve time for a first-time nonviolent marijuana possession charge? Tell us your story and you could win big.
The loveliest of all was the unicorn.
You can remain anonymous, and if we use your story on the podcast, you'll win a copy of the DVD Totally Baked, autographed by AC/DC's lead singer Brian Johnson, as well as excellent Normal swag like stickers and posters, and a steak dinner from Drug Czar John Walters. Steak dinner depends on whether the Drug Czar keeps his word, which isn't very likely.
We didn't arrest 800,000 marijuana users. That's the same lie I just talked to your colleague back there about.
Send us your email, IamAMarijuanaUnicorn, to stash@normal.org today. Contest ends Friday, October 10th, 2008.
Don't you forget my unicorn.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid and which claims are reefer madness? Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Normal's look at cannabis science. Hey everyone, time for a dose of cannabis science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Mitch, welcome back to the Stash.
Great to be on the show.
Well, we don't have a particular brand new study to talk about today, but we wanted to cover a subject that gets a lot of inquiries here at the Daily Audio Stash, and I'm sure, Dr. Earlywine, you get a lot of inquiries too, and that would be the subject of drug testing, and specifically, you know, testing for cannabis. And let's just talk a little bit about that and what the average cannabis user is facing out there in the workplace, in school, and so on.
Quite a bit of drug testing pre-employment, and then we've talked about it before, but it seems to be getting more rampant also, this drug testing in the schools. I've been really unimpressed with the data on drug testing in the schools. It does not seem to lead to decreased use. Schools that test don't seem to have more problems with drugs than schools that do, and I really feel like in some ways it sets a bad tone and seems kind of unfair. We've mentioned before, too, often the folks who get tested are the folks who want to get involved in extracurricular activities, and we have data suggesting that involvement in extracurricular activities actually buffers folks against drug problems. So it seems like a really counterproductive habit, but one that seems to be really catching on in kind of scary ways.
Yeah, it seems to me, you know, they want to drug test the kids that would want to get into football, and actually they it's not just sports. They've expanded it to any competitive extracurricular activity. So we could be talking about chess club or the drama club. It's just ridiculous.
It really is sad, and it's just an unfair way, and sets kind of a strange tone, particularly at an age when adolescents are already having enough problems with authority.
No kidding.
I'm often emailed about both urine tests and hair tests, and the components of each are really different, and unfortunately the folklore around them also is sometimes pretty strangely inaccurate. The data on employment stuff suggests that there are companies where they do drug tests and they say, look, these companies actually do have lower rates of drug use. And I've been looking really closely at that, and it is true, but it's often a culture at that industry or at that individual company that would make drug users not want to work there anyway. It's often a rather conservative business or a conservative setting, a lot of, you know, putting on a tie and having lots of meetings and things like that where folks may be turned away. But a close look also shows that these are also companies that often offer a lot of drug-related help or a lot of prevention of drug problem treatment programs and things like that. So I think it may not be the testing so much as the atmosphere there that's contributing to that. So I don't want to make too big a deal out of that for the employers who are listening. And clearly it's not, it's just not the best environment as far as some things are concerned. And then there are certain industries, particularly in certain locations, where if they do drug tests, it makes it impossible for them to hire the best of the best, and I think that's kind of an intriguing laugh.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I've seen that, you know, in my own personal experience of working in lots of different industries, that when you start looking at the creative industries and the restaurant industry and those type of industries, we do tend to have less drug testing and more of a accepting culture, at least of marijuana. I was wondering if you'd noticed the same thing.
Very much so, and I want to turn to the idea of, you know, let's test for doing a good job when you're on the job. Let's focus on the things that really matter rather than some kind of pre-employment arrangement where you just want to see if somebody's a drug user before you even hire them. Sarah Smucker Barnwell and I wrote a chapter on this in Pot Politics and pointed out that, in fact, it doesn't seem to add to efficiency, and the testing procedure itself, particularly on the job, takes time away from the job. How can you be, you know, writing code or getting good work done if you're in the bathroom with some guy looking over your shoulder while you pee? It's obviously a mixed blessing. When I talked to some employers about this, they said, look, I just don't want to be around that kind of person. And I'm thinking, I feel like the stereotypes around kinds of person are obviously, you know, really out of whack. And then what if somebody is just not a good worker but happens to use alcohol excessively or something like that? It seems a rather backward approach to the whole employment situation.
Is there any data out there showing that these drug testing in the employment does any good, that there's any change in productivity or absenteeism or sick leave or health care or anything like that?
No, and in fact, there are no links in amount of sick days and job turnover and things like that. Among cannabis users in particular, no increase in accidents or anything along those lines. And the funny thing is, then there's at least one study that suggests in the computer industry you actually lose time. You end up decreasing productivity because of the time spent doing the drug test. And then the other questions I get, of course, are how do I beat this? How do I get around this? There are a number of products that I know, you know, people see for sale all over the place. As far as urine screens are concerned, the biggest contributor seems to be the amount of water consumed. So as silly as it sounds, the more water you run through your system, the fewer metabolites of anything are left, and that seems to be the way to do it. People have talked about, well, they're going to measure my creatine, and should I take some, and all these other things. And it's funny how the drug testing industry and the beating drug testing industry are sort of in this battle with each other. So far, it looks like the rules that you can really follow are consume a lot of water until the day before the test, and then make sure you don't give the very first urine of the day, which seems to have, after you've been asleep all night, a whole lot of metabolites in it. I invariably will get, you know, individuals who say, I used such and such, or I drank a big bottle of vinegar, or, you know, something wild like that. And often the real deciding factor is just the amount of fluid consumed.
You know, I faced a urine test one time like that, and it's about the same time that I was taking martial arts training, and I was really into my health at that time, and one of the things they always tell you is to drink a lot of water for your health. It was like 8 glasses of water per day. I was working out so much that I was probably up to about 12 glasses of water. And when I went to take the test, they said, well, sorry, your urine is too dilute. You know, there's too much water in it. It's too dilute. And my response to that was, well, this is what the health people tell me I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to drink lots of water. It seems that this drug testing thing is against our own health.
Well, and then so in order to have a valid test, you basically have to do something unhealthy for yourself.
Yeah, that's
to make that happen. It just seems you're always guilty until proven innocent under the circumstances, and it's just kind of a shame.
Yeah. Now, speaking of some of these products, you know, we talked about the drug testing products or to try to beat the tests, but now another thing we're finding, especially when we talk about parents and kids, are these home drug testing kits that they're trying to market to parents to test their kids at home. And I understand there's a lot of opposition to this within the scientific community.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the urine screens that are for sale to individuals claim certain accuracy rates, but don't have a ton of support for how accurate that is. As you might guess, I talk about this in the Parents Guide to Marijuana. I feel like it's just such a crazy statement about your relationship with your child. And I understand, you know, people have some troubled relationships with adolescents or things like that, and they want to be more trusting. It turns into this wild authority situation where they just try to beat the test with you rather than be candid with you. I think a lot of times what we need to find out is, what do I really want to know? Am I concerned about use here, or being right, or being the boss, or something like that? And under those circumstances, do I trust these, you know, $4 little urine screens? And if it does show up positive, am I willing to entertain the idea that it's a false positive? And having this conversation one-on-one, particularly with your teen, could be a lot more productive than any information you get from the tests themselves. Invariably, I'll get emails saying I'm naive and you don't understand and it's a disease and things along those lines. But would this contribute to your relationship with your child or not? And that's really the bottom line. And sharing the dilemma with your child. Look, I don't really want to do this drug testing. I'm not interested in your pee, but I want you to be healthy. Let's talk about a way that we can each agree that things are going well and say that things are okay. And it's funny how that conversation can sometimes mean a lot more than the test itself.
Yeah, it seems to me that if you're having trust issues with your adolescent, the last thing you need to do is to create more trust issues through the use of some sort of testing regime.
The other issue is that the shampoos and for the hair testing that people email me a lot. And the hair testing is a different situation from the urine screens because, you know, the hair, some of the hair on your head has been there longer and we're in situations that are different. The shampoos do seem to decrease the concentration of metabolites in the hair, although sometimes not to undetectable levels. So doing it just one time may not be enough to make it happen. The other thing, and this is just a product of the chemicals themselves, darker, curlier hair seems to hold on to the metabolites better, even in response to the shampoo. And of course, who are the people who have the darkest or the curliest hair? Often members of non-white ethnic groups. What a shame that we end up with this kind of bias chemically under these circumstances. It really is kind of a drag.
Yeah, to add to all the other biases that people of color have to go through in this drug war, that's for sure.
Exactly.
What do you think of the notion about how drug testing for marijuana in particular might lead to an incentive to try other drugs that are more dangerous but less likely to be tested for or detected?
It's rather unfortunate because I've seen this consistently, particularly with clients who are on probation. So they say, look, I can't get high, I can't smoke marijuana because it'll be detected, so I'm just going to do a quarter hit of acid every day.
Mm.
And I'm thinking this is just a horrid situation where you're essentially, you know, not that hallucinogens have these outrageous negative consequences, but it's hard to function on a quarter hit of acid every day. You know, this is essentially going to turn into a really maladaptive behavior simply because of some of the flukes of these drug tests. And boy, what a waste of resources. The other thing that comes up is people often ask me, you know, if I'm in the same room as people who are getting high, will that have an impact and can I make that argument? As far as the urine screens go, it's probably unlikely that you got a positive urine screen because you were in the room when other people were smoking. However, if people are smoking and the smoke actually does get in your hair, that can create a false positive. So I hate to say it, but, you know, stay away from people who are smoking if you're going to be subject to a hair test, and definitely shampoo as much as you can.
Mm. Well, it's quite a subject. A lot we could talk about on drug testing. Is there anything else you want to address before we call it a day?
I know it's easy for me to say because of my position and things like that, but I'm hoping that people will consider the idea that there are situations where they just won't do this. If we are all unwilling to do this as a pre-employment thing, for example, if nobody will agree to that, well, they'll have nobody to hire. And I, you know, I'm not saying anybody needs to go on unemployment to avoid this or something like that, but this is something that I think it's worth considering, is turning down these places that want to drug test us in order to say, no, you know, that's not what's important. What's really important is my performance. Let's focus on that.
Yeah, I turned down quite an IT career to be here talking to you today. It all worked out in the long run for me. It can work out for you too. Dr. Earlywine, thanks for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Great to be on the show.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our Daily Audio Stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. If you like your rock indie, then today's musical hit from The Priddle Concern will make you smile. The track, Like to Smoke, is guitar-driven, vocally appealing, and has an emotional grunginess worthy of The Pumpkins or R.E.M. The Priddle Concern is out of Ontario, Canada, and the band is Bill Priddle's first project since leaving the well-known Canadian punk band Trouble Charger. The band is made up of Bill Priddle on vocals and guitar, Mitch Bowden on guitar, Scott Ramilla on bass, and Dave Dunham on drums. The band released its debut album, The Priddle Concern, on Sparks Music in 2008. For more information about The Priddle Concern, you can visit their website at thepriddleconcern.com or just check the links at our blog at stash.normal.org, where we've got more information about this artist and an MP3 download of this song. It's The Priddle Concern with Like to Smoke.
Just need my pills. Don't have my pills. Hi, this is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. We are the oldest, largest, and best-known marijuana law reform organization in America. And it's all because of your support. Take some time to join Normal at www.normal.org. Your membership supports this podcast, our websites, our policy research and analysis, and our annual conferences. Changing marijuana laws is a grassroots effort, and it starts with you, the stakeholder. Join Normal today and add your voice to the millions of cannabis consumers who demand equality with our beer-drinking friends.
Way back, Mr. Chris Conrad.
Yeah, yeah!
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Madeline.
And if you went to a pharmacy, you could get it. But they didn't call it marijuana, they called it cannabis, and they called it hemp. And then 70 years ago, they changed the word, and they started calling it marijuana. But they even spelled it different than the Mexicans spelled it. So nobody knew what the heck they were talking about. And they made it illegal with the Marijuana Tax Act. And that was the law of the land until 1969, which was basically, let's go to 40 years ago. We got Ronald Reagan for president. And we got a whole other drug war. And a whole bunch of baloney type of studies being produced and put out there. And it was fought in the courts by Normal, and they went all the way to the DEA chief administrative law judge. And they had him make the ruling. And he said, this is a fact about marijuana. This is a fact about marijuana. It is the safest, therapeutically active substance known to mankind.
Yeah!
There has never been a court in the country that disproved that statement. That's a fact, a proven fact in the United States court. But did that change the law?
No.
10 years ago, Oregon became the sixth state in the United States to legalize cultivation, possession, and use of marijuana for medical purposes. That changed the law. And in California, if you have the right paperwork, you can go in there and buy marijuana across the counter legally. And that is a change. And so this moves forward to today. And what we see today is that we have the Asha booth over there, where in 2 years you're going to get to vote again about whether Oregon adopts the policy that we have in California. Legalized sales of marijuana in a tax regulated framework. And I'll tell you what, I don't want to tax the pot in my backyard. I don't want them taxing the pot in my back pocket. But if a guy's going to sell it and make money, if I have to pay tax to buy a bologna sandwich, I might as well pay tax to buy some marijuana. And that's just the way it's going to be, folks. We're in the 21st century. I want a president who knows how to run a computer and who knows the difference between a dangerous drug and a safe activity. And so then, here we are. And so I want to say the future. I want to be back here in 5 years, and I want to see you guys with dispensaries where you can buy marijuana over the counter. And I want to see hemp fields all surrounding Portland here, the beautiful green waving evergreens of cannabis. And I want to come back here in 10 years, and I want to like leave this hemp stock, walk down the street to a coffee shop where I can buy a joint over the counter here in Portland. That's what I want in 10 years. And in 100 years, I want to look back and say, wasn't that a stupid thing we ever did, banning the most useful plant on the planet Earth? And so what I want to do is, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? You guys want to save the world? Yes!
Yeah!
Do you guys want, like, smoking herb?
Yeah!
Yes! Do you guys like to stop sending people to prison for marijuana?
Yeah!
Then are you going to do something about it?
Yeah!
That's what I want to hear. I want y'all working with OCTA to get this on the ballot. I want you to educate, to organize, to motivate, and to legalize. The next speaker is somebody that I know from that. He was the first one of the first medical marijuana cases I testified in Lake County, and he got acquitted by a jury, and he went for But I tell you, to this very day, he still says he's the luckiest man on earth. And we're sure lucky to have him here with us today. Ladies and gentlemen, Eddie Love! Have a big hand for Eddie Love!
Thank you, Chris. Hi, ladies and gentlemen. This may be the last time I ever speak in public before I go to prison for the rest of my life. December 1st, I go for sentencing for growing 34,532 plants, give or take a few thousand. The part that really pissed them off was when they came back in 5 months and I had 11,000 more going. And 4 years later, they were finally able to convict me in front of a jury because the judge made her jury instructions so strict and the interpretation of the law so narrow that as they sat there with tears in her eyes, admitting that they knew I was innocent, they convicted me anyway. The reason I mention this is all of these many years I've been an activist, everybody has always asked me, what's the best thing to do? And as I stand here looking at going to prison for the rest of my life, I tell you the best thing to do is tell them to shove that deal right up their Stand up for your rights as an American. Stand up for your rights as a human being. And even if it means going to prison for the rest of your life, don't bend your knee to Babylon. Right after I left here last year, I went home and my wife Linda, who was my partner for almost 20 years fighting this battle, passed away. On her deathbed, I promised her I'd never quit. I ask all of you to have the courage to stand up with me just once, and I promise you we'll never have to stand up again. I know exactly why the Republicans in particular are so pissed off about marijuana and why they don't want it legal. And that's real simple. If they passed the laws to make marijuana legal and this whole country was smoking pot, overnight we'd all be Democrats. And the Democrats would be liberals. And the liberals would be like us. And us, we'd just be ruling the world. You guys would be able to find my address on the internet, I'm sure. So after the 1st of December, drop me a card or a letter. I thank you. Linda thanks you. Our family thanks you. Respect all, hurt none, and love one another. Thank you, Portland, for having me back. And now the herbivore. Put it together for Jim and the boys.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our audio stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes going back to the 19th century and the British India Hemp Drugs Commission report of 1839 through 1894. And remember, in this quote, the word bang refers to a marijuana-like substance that is used in that area of the world. The quote's from J.M. Campbell, who said, quote, to forbid or even seriously restrict the use of so holy and gracious an herb would cause widespread suffering and annoyance, and to large bands of worshipped ascetics, deep-seated anger. It would rob the people of a solace in discomfort, of a cure in sickness, of a guardian whose precious protection saves them from the attacks of evil influences." End quote. It's been used for centuries, and for the past few decades we've all known that prohibiting marijuana causes far more harms than the marijuana itself. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for listening to the podcast. We'll see you next time. And until then, take care of each other, tokers.